This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Vanessa Cocojaba. How are you, Vanessa?
I'm very well, Chris. How are you?
I am excellent. We're currently sitting here at Wine to Wine now. We're in one of the booths overlooking the main stage. Someone's presenting away, but we're not worried about them. We're going to be talking about wine.
They look too serious for people talking about wine, don't they?
They do. Especially at 5 o'clock in the end of the day, they should be rolling around.
Exactly, and be more merry. Everyone is a bit stiff over there. So I'm happy to be up here with you rather than down there. Don't tell them, though.
No. Well, we'll be out live. Everybody will know. But we're going to talk about wine in Africa. You're from Ghana.
I am.
So we're going to focus in on Ghana a little bit. But
that's right.
What I really want to do is I am pretty ignorant of pretty much wine in Africa apart from the wine-producing regions in South Africa, and little bit about wine production in Algeria. Everything in between is a complete blank.
Namibia is producing wine as well. Areas coming up. So, yes, there's a lot more happening with wine production in Africa.
Namibia.
That's right.
I've got a map of Africa. Because I'm worse than Americans.
This is not a wine podcast. Now we're doing geography. Namibia is down there as well.
Just above South Africa.
Yeah. That's right. So they have the climate and the right climate for wine growing as well. Mm. Grape growing, I should say. So the grapes.
Do they have that cold current, the Benguela current?
That's right.
That comes up the side from South Africa.
That's right. Because our side, if you look across West Africa to East Africa, but especially West Africa, that's the sub-Saharan area region, and it's quite hot. It's tropical. Whereas down south, they have a cooler temperature as well. Otherwise, if you do it in, let's say, Ghana, we will try it at some point. But then I'm always afraid of the grapes ripening too early.
Yeah.
And not having enough acidity and everything that you need for the wine.
Do you get a cold winter there? Does it get cold?
In Ghana?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, so you probably find you land up like Brazil with two crops a year. And
that's right.
Short, the vines only last 20 years.
And exactly. Exactly, yes, because ours is tropical.
Yeah.
The coldest time is when we have Hamilton. And with the Hamilton, you have the dryness and the sandy weather from the Sahara coming in.
I was going to say sandy weather. I don't usually use sandy to describe weather.
To describe weather, but you do get sand in the air. When I say sandy weather, it's because you get sand in the air.
Yeah.
And you don't want to breathe that when it's very foggy and all you see everywhere is covered in dust.
Yeah.
And it's very fine sand from the Sahara coming in. So I call it, when we were kids, we used to call it, oh, Mom, the sandy weather.
Yeah.
When we were traveling back to Ghana on holidays for Christmas, and we stayed a bit longer into January, you get the Hamilton, and everywhere was covered in sand, dust. And we used to say, Mom, please take us back. It's the sandy weather again. So I still remember that from then. Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
So a little bit of production apart from South Africa, then Namibia, Algeria, that type of thing. Yeah. But not really a big wine-producing region apart from South Africa. But what I want to talk about is consumption and also a little bit about the wine trading or any of that sort of stuff that's going on in Africa. Is wine a big drink in Africa, first of all?
It has grown in the last, I would say, 20 years. But let me start by saying that Africa is 54 countries.
Yes.
And with the 54 countries, you have the Francophone areas. So they were colonized by the French, and there was a big influence of wine drinking in those areas.
Okay.
So you're looking more at the Anglophone areas. Exactly. But just to explain that the boom is coming a lot through the Anglophone areas, but those are also the big markets. So when you look at Nigeria, for example, when you look at Ghana, South Africa is 60 million, but Nigeria is over 200 million inhabitants.
Yeah.
Ghana is 32 million, but these are the major and big markets, also in terms of GDP. In terms of the economy, so if you're talking about the big economies, you mentioned Ghana, Nigeria, South Africa, Kenya, these countries. So when you look at the fact that most of these countries that I just mentioned to you were colonized by the British, they didn't know wine so much. It's now growing. So the growth is just coming in at a massive rate compared to the other parts where it's Francophone because they always knew wine. So the potential is huge in these areas.
What are the regions that are Francophone that have been drinking wine for a while?
If I look at West Africa, for example, Senegal, they know wine. Cote d'Ivoire, they know wine. Benin, they know wine. Togo, they know wine. Burkina Faso, they know wine because all of those were Francophone areas. If you look at Ghana, that was a British colony. Nigeria was a British colony. Liberia was, if I'm right, American. Sierra Leone as well. So these areas were more beer-drinking nations as opposed to wine-drinking nations. It was either soft drinks like Coca-Cola, Fanta, all of that, beers, or you would have the hard liquor, like the whiskies, the gins, the vodkas, and all of that. So wine is something that has slowly come into the market. When I say that, I'm not referring to the 1% of the population or 0.1% who were traveling and drinking wine. If you're looking at it from being able to sell to the masses or to a larger, to make it into a business, then there has been a lot more people drinking wine. In the last 20 years, I would say.
Okay. So we'll finish up with Francophone areas in a second, but they're the historical wine drinking areas. Are they always source their wines from France? Or is it,
yes. Yes. So there had been a huge influence, and there still is. Well, the French wouldn't want to give up those markets, would they? So there is a lot of influence in terms of French wines that went into those areas. So that has continued. Although I would say that when I speak to other importers from those areas, the market is opening up and there is curiosity to get wines from other wine-producing areas like Italy.
Mm-hmm. We're at Wine to Wine, so it makes sense.
Wine to Wine.
You kind of plug Italy.
Exactly. And South African wines as well has become big on the continent. They've been very good at marketing it across Africa as well. Also, I think what has been a plus sign for the South Africans is because their food and their cuisine is not so far from other African countries in terms of having spices being heavy, the complex food, complex carbohydrate, complex protein on one dish. Mm-hmm. So it's not an entree and then something else. So because of that, the wines have worked well without foods as well, and that has helped them to go across the continent with South African wines more so than others coming in.
All right. And given that the Francophones have had a French influence, the trade in those countries, what is it? Are the wines available in hotels and sort of tourist destinations, or is just wines everywhere like anywhere else?
Well, there's wines in the supermarkets. So the huge, large supermarkets, not catering to just tourists. I wouldn't think anyone would base their business on tourists because the tourists will come and leave.
Yeah.
So how are you going to turn that into a proper business if you're just waiting on tourism? So it has to be indigenous people. And you can't base it on just expatriates coming into the country because they will have a shorter time within the country. So the majority of supermarkets, but large supermarkets that have shelves upon shelves of wines, they're diplomatic shops that have wines. And then you have the local shops also that have wines. Because what do you have to realize with our culture? I'm speaking about Ghana, for example. We have a tendency to have our meals with a drink. So even if it's our heavy food, someone will have it with Coca-Cola or Fanta or, you know, beer or something. So what we're trying to do is replace that Coca-Cola with wine. So it's not something new to our culture to have a beverage with the food. It's a matter of replacing that. So where do these people go to buy beverages? You have to make the wine accessible in the same places to buy it. So it's not as it used to be that you find it just in a diplomatic shop or in a high-end supermarket. you could find it just around the corner in a shop, you know, that sells other beverages, whiskeys and stuff, and they'll have wine as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Anglophone?
Anglophone.
Yeah.
Let's just call the countries by the names.
So you mentioned Nigeria. Nigeria is
huge.
It's huge.
It's huge.
It's got some decent income in there as well.
Absolutely.
And it's an oil producing country.
It's got
Kenya, for example. You also mentioned Kenya. Mm-hmm. Kenya's got some good agricultural flowers, all that type
of
thing.
Yes.
A lot of produce is grown in Kenya and exported into Europe.
That's
so
right.
So there those markets I can see being reasonably open to consumption of wine.
Angola,
I don't know much about Angola.
Wow, Angola as well, because they're rich in minerals and they have oil as well. You know, the whole of Africa has natural resources.
Yeah.
And almost every country that I know of, they have natural resources. Mm. So where the natural resources, there's also the money there for people to buy and to spend. It's just a division of where the money goes, and also,
they call it the resource curse sometimes.
Exactly. It can be, because everyone is rushing into the market to get it. It's like a beautiful woman. You know, it can be a blessing and it can be a curse because everyone is rushing around you. So it's the same thing. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I'm not being sexist because I'm a woman. So I can say that, right?
Yeah. As a beautiful bloke, you know, I don't experience that myself. But
you don't?
No.
What are you doing wrong, Chris?
I'm doing something wrong. You must be
doing something wrong there. We have to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah. I'll have a chat to my wife about what's going on. These, Mark, you said there's been some big growth over the last 10 years.
Absolutely, yes.
What's driving that growth? Is there anything in particular?
It's the medium income side that is growing. So it's not...
Middle class, mid-income
brackets. There's more work. So it's not just about, I've finished school, I don't have work, so I don't have access to money. So banks have opened, corporates have set up, corporate organizations and stuff. So people are able to work and earn an income. So when they're earning, their lifestyle changes as well. They want to go out, they want to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be amazed that in Ghana, for example, the number of restaurants that are opening, the number of lounges, clubs, places to eat, because we love our social lives. I mean, which tropical country doesn't?
Yeah.
So people want to find money to enjoy themselves. So if they now have access to money in terms of corporates, in terms of banks opening, in terms of all of that, they're earning an income and the lifestyle changes. So the lifestyle changes and they want to have wine with their food. They want to socialize with friends, sit down, have a girly night out, you know, bachelor parties, all of that. And they don't want to be drinking beer anymore. They also want to be drinking wine and say it's cool to be drinking wine, all of that. So that has changed the dynamics and it's opened up the market for sales and opportunities to develop it into a business as opposed to let me try it, you know, as people were doing in the past. Yeah.
Okay. And your business is in Ghana. What's your
business exactly,
Vanessa?
So Alcohol Wines is a wine merchant, but it's not just about bringing wines in, importing wines in and distributing. It's also about building the brands because you don't want it to be I'm in today and gone tomorrow. I remember in the UK, the times when at parties, it was all Pink Lady, don't laugh. It was Pink Lady, Baby Sham, Lip Frelmish. I don't know if I'm talking about, it gives my age away when I mention those, Lambrusco, all of that at the time. And suddenly people didn't want to have those at their parties. It kind of was out there so much and then it kind of died out. Lambrusco's come back a big way and I'm glad that it has. But
not in the UK.
Really? It still hasn't in the UK?
No.
Really? So what is it for sparkling? Is it
Prosecco?
Yeah. We have Prosecco too in a really big way. But what I'm saying is that my company is not just to bring in wines and fill the market with it, but to bring awareness to that particular brand, to make turn it into a household name, to have people reaching out. So if it's Prosecco, why are you reaching out for that particular Prosecco brand as opposed to the other one? What is the palate of the people? So we're marrying our palate, our climate. What would people like to drink? What would they like to have with our food? Together with the winery. So there may be wineries who will approach me and I'll say, now's not the moment. Why? Because people are still learning their palates. So we've gone from people wanting sweet wines to wanting fruity, but not so sweet. And then you have people who want the dry and the still wine. But then what will go better with our food is also important. So these are things that we bridge the market, or we bridge from the winery to the consumer. Both have to understand where the other's coming from, so everyone's a happy camper in the end.
So you're an importer, but you're also trying to build brand building
for the wineries.
Did you say you had a wine shop? Was it a retail outlet?
We distribute to we distribute to retail outlets, but eventually we have one flagship store shop in our new premises as well. So people can walk in and buy just a bottle for them to taste it. Because sometimes it's difficult when you walk into just a normal wine shop. If the assistant in there or the salesperson doesn't know much about wines, and it happens a lot in Africa, so grab a bottle, then people can walk away. So we want to have a shop in our premises where we have our showroom as well, our headquarters. So when people walk in, we can explain to them, you know, the taste that they're going to have, the experience, everything, and it helps them to make a choice. So that's something that we want to do. And we also have the online. So that's something I started 5 years ago. So we'll have online so people can just reach for it from home. So it's not so embarrassing when they go out to buy and they're not sure what they want, and the sales assistant also doesn't know how to explain it to them. We have the online, which they'll be able to buy, and it'll have information on there about tasting food pairing with our local dishes and things like that.
How many, because I looked on the internet and you sort of said, oh, because I sent you some questions and you were like,
and I started laughing.
You laughed at me and said, oh, that's all from the internet, that's all out of date. And I'm like, well, okay, that's fair enough. Just trying to do some prep. But I found maybe three importers and one champagne bar or something like that, a wine and champagne bar, I think they describe themselves. But you said there was a lot more various.
Absolutely, yeah. So, all the ones you mentioned were not even the major players in the market. I'm not going to mention names.
But, oh, yeah, please do. I don't mind.
They were not the major, I would say, importers.
Couldn't find the major ones on the online.
They don't exactly. They're hiding away. So you wouldn't find them on the internet, and I think that's one of the challenging things for wineries and vineyards when they're coming into Africa to see who they'll partner with, because that information is already available from country to country. So who do you go to? Who would be the big players? Who would represent? It's not just about big players, though. Who can represent your brand? Because if you're coming in to bring your wines and you go to a well-established importer, all well and good that they're shifting numbers for a certain winery, but will they be able to devote time to your brand and your products and, you know, get it into the market? So these are all things that you have to look at if you're coming from that world. But what I'm excited about, and the reason why I entered this market, Chris, is because when I went to Ghana in 2009 with friends, we couldn't find wines that we really wanted to drink. It was very low-end, supermarket, entry-level South African wines. And there's some really good ones, but these were not the entry-level South African wines that I would drink.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was a high-end, and that was it. And there was a lot of white wine which were way past the time to be drunk. They looked like jaundiced something. I won't go into that. The color as well. People were not storing wines well because it's very hot. It can get up to 40 degrees, you know. So how do you store the wines? All of that. And that is changing a lot. And that's the reason why I went into this business as well, because I was alarmed that the variety of wine was very limiting. at the time, prices were all over the place. And I thought, there's so much more out there than just this. So bringing people round to saying that you can have this wine with this food, you can chill the wine like this, you can store the wine like that, so you get a full benefit, was really important. And it's been fun doing that as well.
Mm-hmm. So how many retail outlets are there in Ghana? Is it like every major town has a wine shop?
Or every major town, and there's more than one. I mean, there's one particular company that has 11 outlets.
Mm-hmm.
So they're spread across regions. So not just in the capital, Accra. You go to Takoradi, for example, that's towards the western region, central region, and that's the oil belt. So there are wine shops there because it's the oil belt. Yeah. Exactly, there's money. You go to Ashanti region, there's the gold belt and cocoa as well. So obviously they're going to have shops and things there. You even go up north, and there's shops because you're going towards the border. There are hotels. There's park with all the animals and stuff. So people go up there. They stay up there. Tourism. So people want that. You go to the Volta region. It's by the lake. So people also want to have wines and stuff. So it's really spread out. You go to the eastern region, which is not far from the capital. People are having parties, there are hotels there. So it's no longer concentrated in Accra, the capital. It has spread out a lot. So in terms of shops, as you were saying, almost every petrol filling station, you will find a variety of wines.
Okay. Yeah.
You'll find champagne, you find hard liquor. Same place where you find your Coca-Cola and stuff and all of that, they'll have a whole shelf.
Okay.
Which wasn't there, let's say, 15 years ago.
Okay.
Or even 11 years ago. You find a few petrol stations having that. Now it's become convenient for people traveling outside for funerals and conferences to stop at a petrol station and buy a bottle of wine, pick up a bottle of champagne or something. So you have those. And you also have shops that sells not just wines. They'll sell soft drinks and everything else, and they have them in those shops too.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so you're starting to get good penetration.
Oh, yes.
And you mentioned sort of high wines, low wines, but it's that middle tier where, you know, like super expensive wines, there's always going to be some rich dude buying a super expensive wine.
Absolutely.
And there's people who will drink anything to get a bit hammered at
exactly.
the bottom end. But the middle tier is where you've got an opportunity to really develop a
exactly.
business.
Exactly, exactly.
Because there can be volume there as well and margin.
Yes.
So how is that middle tier going?
That has grown a lot, and it's still growing quite a lot because what we have is when people have funerals, and you'd be amazed at this, funerals for us can last 3 days. And if it's your dear person or loved one who died, it's on you. But everyone is coming there not to mourn with you. They're actually coming to have a festival or a party with you.
Yeah, yeah.
So usually it's called celebration of life or call to glory. So they're partying, basically, and you're serving wine to people, especially your select friends who came to mourn with you. So it could be 800 people, it could be 1,000 people, it could be up to 5,000 people.
Select friends, yeah.
Yes, select friends. Because, you know, the funny thing, when it's funerals, they write at the bottom of the thing, all mourners or sympathizers are cordially invited. And yet when you're having a wedding, it's a seated thing. So it's this is restricted or limited to one person. So a lot more people turn up at funerals. And then you're like, crikey, I have to buy wines and serve 800 people or 400 people. So that's when you need the middle tier, the mid-tier wines, because that's where it's going to go. You don't want the bottom because...
Yeah, it's like, who buys the cheapest coffin?
Exactly.
That's my wife's favorite saying.
Exactly, exactly. So you do need those wines to fill that market. The parties as well. The weddings with 700 people, 1,000 people, engagement parties, social gatherings. There's always a party going on in Ghana, seriously.
Okay.
So that mid-bracket wine fills that gap really well.
Okay. I think we'll wrap it up there, Vanessa. And next week I want to find out about the brands that are making waves and what you think is the opportunity for different styles of wine within the country.
That's fine. Yeah.
Cool.